Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Larry Richard Unfiltered with Jimmy Crenn and Sheila Hyland, episode 33, emanating from our favorite spot, 23rd and Vine on East Carson Street, just off the Birmingham Bridge. I call it Pittsburgh's, what's that famous New Orleans road?
Bourbon Street, man.
That's it. This is it. And you're a resident of Southside, Jim Crenn.
Oh, yeah, man. I'm out there partying and falling on the streets every week. Yeah.
Fights and
Sheila
is on still another vacation. She's on the island of Antigua.
She is the independent billionaire. People don't know this about Sheila.
She is.
She is every month in some exotic location, and I'm like, what is going on? So this week, well, it's Antigua. I got
to
go.
Jimmy and I are saving up to go to an island. We're going on an island. We're going Neville Island.
Yeah, I took it right. You set it up.
You got to. You just. It's like you and I. We know each other so well now. And we're excited this time. We're going to talk with the guys about beer. So we got Hal B. Klein from Pittsburgh Magazine. And Hal, I asked you, it's okay to leave the B off, but some people just can't.
Some people call me Hal B. all the time, but the B stands for beer. So, you know, here we are talking beer. Yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah, it's really Hal Beer Klein.
And every Thursday on the KDK Radio Morning Show, we talk to Rich Cook, who's your digital director, and he makes your to include whatever it is you're talking about, or in this case, writing about.
Yeah, he's on the show, and he's always telling us what's going on with the magazine and all the good stuff. There's so much happening in food and drink in Pittsburgh all the time. Bob and I were talking before the show about how it just seems like it's continuously one day after another. There's more and more and more things to do.
And Bob Batts is with the Post-Gazette. Bob, how long have you been doing what you do?
Oh, man, I don't even know if I want to say that. I've been doing it as long as Jim Crenn's been doing what he does. I'll say that. Yeah,
wow, man.
Back to
30 years at least.
8-track tapes or cassettes?
I always preferred 8-tracks, though.
Oh, yeah. Major's great. Remember that? Yeah. Middle of the song would stop. You have to wait. Then it continue again. Well, how do we get through that, man?
Like, how do we survive? How do you do anything? We spent a few weeks ago some time in the Dream Labs over in East Liberty with this robotics boom in Pittsburgh. And the artificial intelligence wave is been here. There's like a square mile of Pittsburgh. Yeah. What do you say? There's 100 companies?
100 different robotic companies.
And they're working on replacing Gemini. So this...
You're real close.
This may be one of our last opportunities.
Yeah. Artificial intelligence. Have you guys been by that Hazelwood Green, that giant complex with the old steel mill and everything right along the river? Have you gone by there? There's a lot of robotics in there, but it's like it's this frame of an old steel mill, and they built the buildings and all these labs and, you know, startups and stuff in there. It's really, really cool. They actually have a walking trail just for this complex. So
just for the workers. Yeah. It's crazy, isn't it? Our city.
It's beautiful.
All of a sudden, we're this techie kind of robotic city, and we're used to the blue collar thing, and we're kind of a white collar city in a way. I guess we're growing that way in a way, huh?
In a lot of ways. Yet we maintain a heritage in that link to when back in the day there were little microbreweries everywhere in Western Pennsylvania. Then they all kind of got absorbed into one when we just had the Pittsburgh Brewing in Lawrenceville and then Rolling Rock in Latrobe. But now, how many? Hal, you've been following this very closely. How many are there now?
Oh, boy. I think you might know better than I do. I think there's more than 30 at least.
Yeah, right? They're in the county. There's more than 40 in Allegheny County and in this city.
Microbrews.
Craft breweries. Craft I guess breweries. Is the way that we call them. Microbrews dates us, but that's what we used to call them in the 80s and 90s.
Oh,
when
they
were coming on. So
we don't call them that anymore.
No, some of them aren't that small. You know, some of them. And now there's all these terms. I was just talking to a friend of mine who wants to start one, and he has his eyes on a nano pico brewery, which means small, but it also sounds like what people over here call their grandparents, nano and pico. Yes. I don't know. So, but a lot of them aren't small anymore. So craft brewery would be the term. There's probably 40 in the county, and I track them on a spreadsheet at work at the Post Gazette for a map. And right now I've got like 300 that I'm following. Not all of them are open yet, but that would be State College, Erie, Morgantown, Ohio, wow. Eastern Ohio. So it's I think it's more than some beer people think really sure. right now. So
is that the most in the country? Is that normal to have that many? Four, it's a lot, right, for a city.
It's probably not the most in the country. It's up there though. Pittsburgh is a beer town in a lot of ways, and people love it. But I think that's a thing that's sort of happened in a lot of different cities across the country. Is you know people started as home brewers a couple decades ago, and then as laws changed, as what we wanted changed, as consumers, as where we wanted to go changed, a lot more people started getting into it and thinking maybe I could do this as a career. And now what we're starting to see is like second generations, people that didn't start as home brewers but started as an apprentice at a brewery are now 5-6 years later opening their own breweries. And so you're starting to see that develop. And that's happening in Pittsburgh, but also in a lot of other cities.
So we are right up there, though. Like Pennsylvania is a big state. You know, California and Pennsylvania are always the biggest at everything. But we're number two in terms of breweries in the whole state. And California is number one, but Pittsburgh is right up there. We have all these little neighborhoods and we have all these little towns, and like a lot of things here, everybody wants their own thing. They don't want to share it, right? So everybody wants to have their own brewery. Now we're getting to the point where little towns are getting their second and third places too, and that's what we're living through this summer, I think.
Yeah, and it was kind of the focus of the story I wrote a couple of months ago for Pittsburgh Magazine, is that these are really becoming our community spaces, right? So as Bob said, each neighborhood, each little town has a brewery, and that's kind of, you know, where maybe you used to go to like the corner bar after work or whatever, you would go to the brewery now, and that replaces that. And that's also thanks in part to some changes in Pennsylvania law that allow for Pennsylvania distilled spirits to also be sold there, Pennsylvania wines to be sold there. So it becomes a thing where it's like the brewery is part of it, the beer is part of it, but the community aspect is part of it. If you want to instead get a gin and tonic, you can get it there as well. And also each brewery has their own character and their own distinction. So you can go play games. Some of them are dog friendly. Some of them have trivia. Some of them have music. And so they become real destinations in a lot of different ways. That's at, you know, foremost for good beer, but also for all the other things it offers that are things that bring us out to like go support places.
It's putting you guys on the spot a little. We had friends coming in from out of town. Say, Larry and I want to check. Said, you guys have like a favorite one or one or two that like you'd say, you got, all right, go here. I said, my friend's in from New Jersey. You want to see Jim? You should go here. Or do you have any of that? Like, can stand out to you?
I mean, I would, you know, I think the thing that's interesting is because it's so neighborhood based, a lot of this is where you live and what's close. So I live in Bloomfield. I love Trace Brewing. Mm-hmm. I love Trace Brewing because it's a great brewery. I love the vibe there. I love the atmosphere there. And I also love that I can walk there. And that's great. I love the roundabout.
It's a walk home.
Good point.
But I also have Uber, which is good, but still, I'm saying.
But I love the roundabout brewery pop-up that's down on the river in Manchester, Chateau, maybe?
The famous neighborhood of Chateau that we all know and love.
Yeah, we all know Chateau.
Sounds very nice. Exactly.
And there, you know, Roundabout was one of the real kind of foundational breweries of the craft brewery movement in Pittsburgh when they started. And now they've closed up shop. They had a place in Lawrenceville that's now Coven Brewery, but they're maintaining their pop-up and they're kind of guerrilla brewing at breweries across the city right now. But it's a great space because you're on the river.
Can you explain the pop-up thing?
The roundabout pop-up is hilarious, and it's pure Pittsburgh. Even though we are getting, you know, techie and white-collar and we're getting away from our roots, I think the pop-up takes us back to our roots because the current owners of Roundabout, but they used to have this pub in Lawrenceville that's turned over to some new young owners now. They were going to do a on-the-water riverfront outdoor beer space. It sounded, you know, good, sounded cool, sounded modern Pittsburgh. But when it opened, it's a gravel lot in front of an old rusty warehouse with a bunch of crap piled up next to it. They put some tents up. They imported some orange picnic tables from Germany that were used for beer fests over there, and they plopped them in the gravel. It's fabulous.
It works.
It's right on the, it's basically right on the point. It's okay. Not on the water. Like, you can't touch the water. There's what? Train tracks, I think, and at least, and then the bike trail, and then the water. But it's beautiful, that and there's no better place to sit out on a day like today and drink a beer. It's
on a
great.
Beautiful day, and it's, you know, great beer. And that's, you know, that's a special thing. So that's one of those things that's exciting. There's usually food trucks there. So you can just go spend the evening, spend a Saturday afternoon.
Well, yourself. I was born in Millville. And never imagining that they, I don't know how long it's been since they converted the church to Mr. Small's Fun House.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Right? 15, I mean, that's been years. A long time.
Sure.
But it's become this little mecca for, mm-hmm. they have a little food truck park in front of one of the breweries down there. Right. And it's really popular. And you could bring your dog and you could sit outside and you, they change out the trucks every week. That's kind of
cool. And you've got a couple of breweries up there. You have the Strange Roots Brew House with an outdoor space. You've got Grist House, which is one of the
Grist House.
You know, Grist House has that ton of outdoor space. It's growing.
I think they named Strange Roots after my family there. I'm pretty sure. But I would imagine there are a lot of people that have no idea. You know how we are in Pittsburgh. If you don't go to a place for a while,
right,
you live here your whole life, like some people have never been to the Andy Warhol Museum, for instance. It's one of the number one destination points for people from out of state to come here in the first place. I've never been inside it, but I'm a Pittsburgher. They just assume I know. I gotta go. My wife's family's yard touched Warhol's backyard in South Oakland, so I gotta go there. But my point is, if you don't drive around or make an effort to discover something new,
right,
when it comes to these little breweries, you're missing out, I think.
What's amazing about it, too, though, is there could be places that you don't even know exist, but then you go to Grist House is a perfect example of this, tucked away in a corner in Millvale, and then you go, and there's 100 people sitting outside. Everyone's drinking beers. Like, there's, you know, 40 dogs. And it's amazing. And you're like, what is, you know, what did I just walk into? It's great. And that happens all throughout the city, all these different breweries. You start to see that. And so it's exciting to be able to, like, expand your horizons, I guess, and, you know, get out, go to a different neighborhood, check out what's there.
Especially after what we just went through with COVID and all that stuff. I'm ready for the summer to check out these places.
Now, places are really coming back in a big way. It's weird to live through this in one way, to Hal's point about having a place in your neighborhood. When craft beer was first coming on here and we had like one or two breweries instead of 40, or we had three beer bars instead of 100, you used to have to drive. Like, I would drive. I remember driving out to East Liberty to the old Sharp Edge, the original Sharp Edge, right, when East Liberty was still kind of a rough neighborhood.
Before Baker Square.
And, you know, the Sharp Edge had like their logo was a cutting knife. And it was kind of scary to go out there back in the 80s and the early 90s. And that was part of its charm. Now you don't have to drive anywhere. I live in the mean streets of Mount Lebanon right now.
And no, that's
a
rough place.
This summer I'll be able to walk to three breweries, much less beer bars or brewery tap rooms. Two breweries, one brewery tap room from my house.
You walk 3 blocks, you will get accosted by a financial manager.
Or an insurance.
They will come right at you.
Yeah, you're right. Financial planner.
Yes.
We're with Bob Batts of Post Gazette, Hal B. Klein. We got a lot of questions for you guys. Larry Richard Unfiltered with Jim Krenn, San Sheila Highland. She promises to be back next week. Yeah.
Antigua.
Episode 33. More to come. Larry Richard Unfiltered with Jimmy Krenn and Sheila Highland, episode 33 from 23rd and Vine here in the South Side, a great wine bar. And we're with Hal B. Klein from Pittsburgh Magazine and Bob Batts from the Post Gazette. Bob, where did you grow up?
Well, I'm a newspaper kid, so my parents were both newspaper people. And back in the day, my dad would say, I want to work at such and such a newspaper. And you'd just go there and they'd hire you. They had three newspapers. Then he could say that and move somewhere else. I lived all over the place. I came to Pittsburgh in 86, just after we got named America's Most Livable City.
Okay.
I came from Dayton, Ohio, and people felt sorry for me coming to Pittsburgh. And they thought, you know, it's like, well,
like,
you know,
a sentence.
Yeah, it was really, they were just felt really bad for me. It's like, well, you got to start somewhere, kid. Good luck. You know? So I remember one of the editorial cartoonists I used to work with made a cartoon for me that had me driving into Pittsburgh, and it said, only you can prevent river fires. It was kind of like riffing on Cleveland, but this is from Dayton. So I felt like I moved to Pittsburgh just as it was on its climb up, and I don't feel like it's ever gone backwards since then. It really hasn't.
So. It is cool that it is.
And Hal, you are a transplant, but you were originally lured here write about beer.
I was lured here to be part of the food studies program at Chatham University, and my first professional writing gig was for Pittsburgh City Paper, our great alt weekly, and it was as the booze columnist.
Nice.
What a great gig.
A mentor of mine said the drinking columnist for City Paper left abruptly. You should apply. And I was out in California visiting some family, and I was like, hang on, everyone. I'm going to get a job writing about drinking.
Was it really?
And I got it, and it was great.
Was it titled Booze Columns? I put a card.
It's called On the
card.
Rocks.
Oh, so I put Booze Columns.
Yeah.
Are you really good at it?
Back in the day when I first got that gig, I was like, this is a great job because I get to go and, you know, have some cocktails or beer for work at 11:30. I mean, it was like work, you know, I paid, you know, $100 a column or whatever, but I was like, I took it very seriously and was like, well, if I have to sample these beers now, I guess I will.
You roll your sleeves and go to work.
Yeah, yeah.
How long ago was that?
That was about 10 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you, like Bob, of course, a little later on, but you decided to stay here.
Yeah, I love Pittsburgh. I decided to stay here. There was so much happening with food and drink, and it's a really great place to live. I think the neighborhoods and the communities here are amazing. And, you know, working with people, Bob actually gave me one of my first writing gigs in Pittsburgh. And I remember, you know, back when I was writing that column, and, you know, back then, you know, it was like every time a brewery opened, it was like big news. And then at a certain point, it was like, they were like, oh, we're opening a brewery. And it was like, okay.
Another one.
Tell us more. You know, and that seeing that shift, I think, was pretty amazing that happened in kind of like the mid-2010s, I guess.
Yeah, and again, and when you and I met and started working together, that was when Pittsburgh was doing its meteoric food rise, too, mm-hmm. like where we went from having nowhere to eat and suddenly we were being written about in some of the national magazines and stuff. So that those two did go hand in hand. We suddenly got a lot more restaurants, and at the same time, we were getting a lot more drinks places, but then the thing that really happened was we were getting a lot more drinks producers, not just places that could pour a good cocktail or serve you a good wine, but they were making it in the back. And that's where a lot of this big boom has come from, sustained now for the last 10 years at least.
With our city, with the food especially, was it the Zagat or whatever, we were top three or whatever it was, restaurant cities, and it was amazing because it was like, you know, L.A., San Francisco, or whatever it was. But I remember interviewed a lady, one of the people that ran Zagat, and I remember asking her about that. I said, well, why are we all of a sudden with, you know, New York, San Francisco, Pittsburgh? She said, well, sous chefs or, you know, or whatever, assistant chefs or in New York or wherever, they want to start their own restaurant. And you look around New York and it's $1 million to start a restaurant, the little restaurant. And it's somehow it started where maybe one or two came here and they're like, wait a second, for $50,000 we can open a restaurant. Really? And all of a sudden, they said these talented young chefs started coming. That's what she said caused really to catch
people
on.
Were coming here. But then also, I think, you know, it for a long time it was, well, if you want to like make it in quotes or whatever, you know, it was like you got to go to New York, you got to go to LA, you got to go to Chicago, and then people realized, well, no, we could just stay here, and that's going to be just as satisfying. And it's like you don't have to go prove yourself. You don't need the validation of New York City to say that you're doing great work. You can do great work where you live. And so a lot of people stayed in Pittsburgh, and then that became a thing that became, you know, self-feeding, right? That more things were happening. And you see it with the breweries now that people were like, oh, man, if they're doing it, I can do it too. And so you start really building like a whole city where there's like all sorts of great stuff happening.
It's creating great incomes for these companies, for these businesses. The microbrews is great.
Yeah, and back to the beer for a minute. Literally, when Jim and I grew up in Pittsburgh, you know, Iron City was the big local. There was actually on the south side here a Duquesne beer.
I live right next door to it.
Yeah, they had the famous clock. And there were some smaller breweries, St. Mary's up in the north, which is all natural. I guess they don't use preservatives. And Rolling Rock, of course.
Right.
Made the region famous nationally. But then outside of those few, there were only And you couldn't get Coors back in the day originally,
yeah.
remember?
Yeah. It was like a cool thing.
They weren't allowed. So there was just Budweiser or Stroh's. You remember Stroh's from Detroit?
Yeah.
And what were some of the others? There weren't that many choices, is my
Straub
point.
Straub and
that's not made here, especially. Yeah, they're
right.
very
right.
small. Yeah.
So now, here's the problem. If you want to go into one of these places, so you have the breweries and then you have the tap rooms, how do you define the difference between a tap room and just a regular bar?
I mean, in a lot of ways, I don't think there is one. And that's an interesting thing that's going on right now, literally right now, is the state law changed about 10 years ago or so. And it wasn't that long before then where you couldn't even brew your own beer. You couldn't even open a brewery in Pittsburgh. That law had to change in the mid-80s. And that happened in Pittsburgh for Pennsylvania. And we could talk about that later. But now what's happening is if you had Jim and Larry's Brewery and you were in Millvale, the state law now allows you to have up to 4 satellite locations of your brewery.
Okay.
So if you can get a building somewhere.
Right.
Wherever you can open the Jim and Larry's tap room,
okay.
make the beer in Millvale and send it out there. Then, so you have that in South Point,
all right.
and you do another one in East Liberty, and then you do one in Blue. You know, that, so that what's happening now? There's a lot of tap rooms that are opening. I did 2 stories this week on my little beer beat. There's a brewery in Verona, a little town on the river across from where you are. Inner Groove Brewing. They just opened their first tap room up in the city's Allentown neighborhood. All they did is they got a great classic storefront, a little bit like this building, and it was a daycare or something like that, and they redid it. There's a blacktop daycare outdoor space next door for like a play space that's now got picnic tables on it. You can go to their tap room and get their beer, mostly their beer.
Okay.
As Hal said, you can also get Pennsylvania whiskeys and spirits and some Pennsylvania wine. So, and maybe some soft drinks for the kid. Voodoo Brewery, which is a very famous big one up in Meadville. They started in Meadville. They've got tap rooms popping up all over the place. This week I wrote about one in Houston, PA. If you think of the suburbs of Canonsburg, if there is such a thing in Washington County.
I know exactly where you mean.
They're getting a tap room of Voodoo there, independently owned and run, but it'll be a place where you can get their beer this summer. It's a block away from Helltown Brewing's Houston tap room. It's like the Lawrenceville of Washington County is coming together down there, and I haven't been down to Houston in a long time. Voodoo just announced this week that they're opening in the old Rivertown space on the North Shore, right across from Southern Tier Brewery and Tap Room and Heinz Field and PNC Park. That's basically a tap room, but it's going to seat 400 people inside and out. It's a really big
space. What happened to Rivertown?
Rivertown brand is still around. They're brewed at what's now the Helltown Brewing Brewery out in Export, PA. We have so many great place names in Western PA. So in Export, PA, they still make some of that brand, but that big space just, it had like an 8-year run on the North Shore, and it just, I don't know exactly what happened, but things open and things close. But Voodoo taking that over on game days, they want to be open for Steelers season this year, and they will be, and it's going to be packed. It's going to be packed.
Have you ever been to Helltown, Hal B?
I know, but I feel like I need to buck up and go there.
Come on, man. You're the guy.
I know. That's the thing. There are like so many places to go.
Is there a saturation
and
point?
So,
are we at a place where you know anywhere?
That's a great question, Jim.
I'm
like,
full of great questions.
Well, I know. When you go here's the thing. I've been out like back to the days where you always knew what beer you were going to order.
Right.
There was rarely even a thought of changing up when you went anywhere.
Or
now,
your server knew what you were and just put it down in front of you. Yeah.
And now there's this, we joke about it. You go to some of these places that have how many taps and how many, this is an IPA, and now you got to, you take a chance, although I know a lot of people that don't mind taking a chance on an extra beer or two.
Sure.
Yeah,
you know
sometimes,
what I'm saying?
You know, it's like you got your favorites and then you can ask the people that work there and see what else is there. I think there's a saturation point on you know, there was a minute where all these bars would open up and they're like, we've got 112 beers on tap. Right. And that was too much. And I think people were like, I am actually not interested in that much. And also, like, how clean are your taps if you're going
right.
to have that
many? How old is your beer?
Yeah. Yeah, and how old is your beer? But there's, you know, when you go to a brewery now and they've got, say, like 8 or 10 styles that they're offering, I think it's pretty exciting because, you know, you might have your favorites and then you're like, well, I'll just try one of these things. And you look at, you know, East End Brewing, which was the first real craft brewery in Pittsburgh that was like selling at bars and was a real trailblazer. There were a few places before that, but they were the first one to operate independently from a restaurant license. And when they started, they had one beer and then they had like four for years and years and years. And now you go and they've got so many different styles of beer. And people, I'm sure, have their favorites. People will say, like, hey, I love Fat Gary. I'm always going to get a Fat Gary. But then they're like, maybe I'll try this one, too, because you trust the brewer. So right. you're like, why not try it?
Well, and that gets back to your question, Jim, about, you know, where should I send my buddies coming in from St. Louis? What's fun now is that some of these breweries specialize in certain styles of beer. So one of my first questions, like, I try not to play favorites because I'm not reviewing these places as much as just writing about them. I would ask, what kind of beers does your buddy like? You know, or what kind of beers are your friends interested in trying?
Say heavy beer.
But then you, if you said German, like a lager style beer.
Yeah, lager, I guess.
We have breweries, newly opened breweries that just specialize in those, in styles true to what they would be made like in Germany. So that'd be a slam dunk to send them there. If Larry's friend coming in from Antigua says, I really like the pale ales, both Hal and I would say, well, why don't you go up to Sharpsburg and go to Dancing Gnome? And that's what they do. They'll have 20 different hazy pale ales this weekend. They don't all just do one style, but some of them are sort of specializing in things now, and that's kind of cool, because if you are a person that doesn't just stay in your neighborhood, you might be in the mood for lagers one day. Let's go, Hal, I'll meet you at the lager place or for the lager. And then on another day, we might be thirsty for a dark stout on a cold, and we'll go somewhere that does those well. So there is some specialization that's popping
that's
up in a lot of these places.
That's probably why we can keep these things growing, these brews, because like you said, if you have your favorite, you build allegiance to that particular brewery, and that's the goal of these people, to make your fan base of your beer, and they, each one can have their own little kingdoms or whatever, and they can all live together happily without someone going under.
So I got a question. The difference between Jim and I and Hal Klein and Bob Batts is they get to write off their drinking, or at least have someone pay for it.
I write it off.
Is that
time. I still write
accurate?
not casually. It's just a Tuesday night.
I'm writing jokes.
I don't get to write it off. But
drinks.
Yeah.
You have those unlimited expense accounts, right?
Oh, I wish.
That's where we're going to drink right after this. We're going out with the guys. They're going to bring his cards out.
All right.
I think we're both lucky to work for publications that still value the professionalism of the work and recognize that you don't need to spend your own money. But I think I also think the era of unlimited expense accounts is long over.
Oh, I thought it was like Mad Men. You know,
be great.
Drinking
and
Bob's office. One more time.
Yeah. The crap that I get at work.
Yeah,
you know, month in and month out, it's like, oh, you're right about beer, and it's like, guys, it's still news, you know. I'm still
come on, Bob. Let's be honest.
But I embrace the challenge. Later.
I appreciate it.
Somebody has to do it.
And yeah, so, they walk in.
It's the work.
Only officer Bob walks in and goes, "Where's Bob? He's sleeping off in the corner."
Yeah, but that's okay.
Wakes up in 2 hours.
Let's go to Pittsburgh Magazine and Hal be hammered.
Yeah, Hal's sleeping enough. Too. They have a nap room.
The nap room.
Yeah.
We actually hired a guy once years ago at KDK Radio. And God is my witness. They brought him in and he was on his first day at the job and he was asking people a couple hours in, where's the nap room?
You know what? Respect. Respect.
Yes, I think it's a trend we should start.
Yeah, we should all.
You have a nap room at Pittsburgh Magazine?
I wish.
We need a nap room.
When I came to Pittsburgh and we were downtown at the Pittsburgh Press Building, rest its soul, that's where I started. Yeah. and coming to Pittsburgh was like, even coming from Dayton, Pittsburgh was another country. It was like coming to another country in lots of ways. But I was looking for a new colleague who was also a neighbor up in Mount Washington, and somebody said, well, go up to the third floor bathroom because he's probably taking a nap. And I was like, what the? And I went up. The old press bathrooms, and this isn't that long ago. I'm not that old, but you could smoke a cigar at your desk when I first got here. That was weird. Cool. And you could take a nap in the third floor men's room in these little vinyl loungettes that they had. I'm okay with taking a nap. I'm not sure that's where I would have been.
I don't know if I want to go
that was one of the
urinal.
That was Pittsburgh in 1986.
Right. Yeah, that's a sign of that happened.
Nap room. We could bring the nap room back.
Yeah, you got a colleague
better.
With
not, in your, not near a urinal. There it is.
We'll no, that, you can't. That's a fail, man. You can't go in there and then
out of the bathroom. Bob and I are bringing it out.
Next thing you know, you got a colleague with explosive diarrhea. That's uncool.
That's just that?
Horrible.
No, I think, you know, as with the work from home culture now, people should, every office should just convert one of the offices into a nap room far away from the bathroom.
I think so. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Just so you know, this was about 25 years ago when they tried to, this guy lasted one day.
Yeah, I bet. Well, they didn't have a nap room. He quit.
He didn't want to work. He said, I can't work under these conditions. Where can you sleep?
Why would you be replaced that doesn't have a nap room, he thought.
Do what I do. Just sleep on the air.
He's probably like a United States senator or something right now, this dude. We were having him.
All right, we're going to have some final thoughts. Hal B. Klein with Pittsburgh Magazine, Bob Batts, Post-Gazette. It's Larry Richard Unfiltered with Jim Krenn, Sheila Hyland, episode 33. Larry Richard Unfiltered with Jim Krenn, Sheila Hyland. Sheila back from still another vacation in Antigua. Next episode.
We're hashing out the nap room off the air, trying to figure it out.
We're talking beer with the guys. The guys would be Hal B. Klein from Pittsburgh Magazine, Bob Batts with the Post-Gazette. And I got to ask you guys, this is a sidebar question, because it goes with having some beers with the guys, you know, talking about sports in this town, a lot about hockey, football, and the NFL has to be the most brilliant marketing geniuses, because everything they do, they have some big lead up and a reveal. And we just had the schedule revealed for the new season, and they went inside and who the people are that pick the dates and how they do all this stuff. Have you seen this?
No, it's fascinating. I'd like to see
it. They're really good at it.
Yeah, and it's cool.
I don't think anyone has sold more beer than pro football over the years.
Definitely replaced baseball probably in the 60s or 70s. Now it's football, though.
What is it, $16 a beer at a Steelers game? I don't get to go to a lot of Steelers games. But, a lot of beer at a pretty good price, too.
Those were all the traditional beers, you know. You said back in the day, the Clydesdales with the Budweiser. Right. That's always one of the Super Bowl commercials. What's the best way for these little I can't call them micro breweries. Craft breweries. To get the word out, it's just word of mouth and social media, right?
Well, one thing that's happening this year is some of them are getting footholds in the stadiums. You know, I want to make sure I get this right. I'm trying to think. One of the local craft breweries, at least, has booths at PNC Park this year, and I don't want to misspeak, but it might even be Grist House. It's somebody that we know, and I apologize for not remembering exactly.
Fatheads.
No, I mean, you've been able to buy those kind of beers at, like, PPG Paint and in the stadiums, but this year some breweries, I think Fatheads is one that has its own booth. You know, they sort of stepped up into that. What's funny about Voodoo being across from both of the stadiums on the North Shore, they make a beer that's based on Renegade. They have a partnership with, talk about marketing, they have a partnership with Styx, the band, such as whatever they're made up of now.
Right.
And they did a beer based on Renegade. It's called Oh Mama. And you will be able to buy it on the North Shore and take a 4-pack with you as you walk the whole block over to Heinz Field. So they're doing a lot of that kind of marketing.
That's
too.
That's interesting.
And there's a lot of money back and forth. So you'll see more. You don't have to drink a Budweiser when you go to a sports event anymore.
There's a lot of selection.
But you do have to spend $18.
I'm surprised because here at 23rd and Vine, Bob Bozzelli and his partner Lou Caputo, who's generational, one of these attorneys that have dealt with the licensing, and they know all the ins and outs, as you pointed out, that a lot of people would never know that you could have these extensions of a craft brewery. But they have Smokey Robinson's line of wines. And so it's really a personal signature. But there aren't many beers like that. Yeah. There's like to Jimmy Crenn, we should have a beer
I
for
think
you.
We need that.
Yes.
We need that.
Yeah. I feel like that's really what will make Pittsburgh
well, break this
shine.
Down. Break them down with the nap room.
Jimmy
Crenn's nap room beer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jimmy
Crenn's nap room brew.
The yes. two go yeah. the two go yeah. together. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
working all right. That's yeah. gold. It's gold, man.
That's genius. Jimmy Crenn's nap room brew.
There it is. We're in.
How?
Two we beers. Talk to a brewery.
Yes. Two beers.
Take there's a nap. Enough of them.
You'll need a nap yeah. after a couple yeah. beers.
That's all we need.
How about
be good as new.
Jimmy Crenn's nap bathroom nap brew?
Yeah, that needs some work.
We're
that
taking,
needs
we're
some
out
work.
Of the bathroom. That's yeah. a, we're modern now. We're yeah. 2.0. We're the new nap room.
Yeah. This is the new nap room.
Yeah. We're leaving the urinals, Blair.
So if I went to, so what's the difference between, I think I asked you this before, what's an IPA? Because I hear guys say, yeah, what IPAs do you have?
I mean, even the definition of that has changed over the years. So it's an India Pale Ale is the basic definition.
Well, what does that
it's
mean?
Characterized by a hoppier beer than you would get from, say, a lager or a traditional pale ale. But, you know, one of the things that has happened over the years is our taste for hops has gotten more and more and more.
Right.
And so what used to be a considered a hoppier IPA, now you've got double IPAs and triple IPAs that are just more and more of that sort of, like hops give it beer like that bitter florality.
What's funny now is that was the beer that, you know, that was like the beer that all the cool beer people drank.
The IPA.
But there's I got friends that have IPA anxiety. Like I'll be like hockey dad friends. I'll be like bringing beer and they'll be like, you know, they'll take you over to the side and hey, don't tell my wife, but I don't like IPAs. I'm like, that's fine. You don't have to like them. They're
IPA
they can be,
anxiety.
They can be so hoppy
yeah?
and so
too
unbalanced
bitter.
That it makes your, if you don't like them, that's fine. You know, I feel bad for people that feel like they have to like IPAs. And as we were getting at earlier in this conversation, right. there's so many different beers right. here just in Pittsburgh that you don't have to like. You never have to even look at an IPA. There's so many different beers. But yeah, a lot of people think they, if everybody at the bar
it's
was
like
ordering
cool
an IPA,
thing.
Well, I gotta, I
right.
can't.
I gotta have one.
I gotta have an IPA.
I've done
too.
It.
I don't even know what
it.
An IPA is.
I've
but
been
I gotta,
yeah. I have no idea what I've been till now.
You've been like, IPA
you
know, shamed.
I would
same?
Just agree with it.
See,
like,
I'm not just
them.
Making this up. Yeah,
I'll get that.
Right?
I'll get that.
But,
I'll get that.
But yeah, let's go with it.
You're a victim of an IPA shaming.
I know, man. I'm educated.
And
I'm broad minded.
I don't know if you guys realize this. I just learned this a couple weeks ago. We were at Market District, Settlers Ridge, and I realized I've known Jim. Long time now, over 20 years,
yeah.
and I found out just a few weeks ago he's a, what do they call that, a friendsitarian? No. What did they tell you the chef told you? You know, there's vegetarian, there's vegans, there's...
Pescatarian?
Oh, yes, I can't remember.
Beeritarian?
That I could drink and eat everything, is that what it is? Like a...
Yeah, you were.
I can't remember
there's
the name
a special
of it.
Name for that.
Yes,
now.
I like everything.
Which reminded me,
the gluttonous guy or something. guy with no borders.
Flexitarian.
I'm a flexitarian. Okay. That was it.
You didn't even
I don't
know you
remember
were
that.
One. You remember it
I
now?
I was stunned. Yeah, that's right. I am a flexitarian.
He's
I
trying to block.
It wasn't. He wasn't trying to insult you.
No, it was
a nice
compliment.
Yeah, that's good.
Have you ever heard flexitarian?
Rarely.
Well,
no, they're serious.
Yeah.
You know, Chef Ben was serious. That's
yeah.
what you call
I'm
somebody who, you know, there's people who fashion
right.
themselves to be vegetarian or vegan, which is totally cool. Whatever you want. Like, to your point,
both.
Bob, if you don't like IPA,
don't
if you
care.
Don't like meat, or if you want to be healthy,
flexible.
Then he's a flexitarian.
Flex a little bit. Yeah. I could eat a vegetarian dish or I can eat steak. Right
well,
there
is... Besides IPA anxiety, I do think that there is a side to craft beer. Hal knows this too, where, you know, it the fact of the matter is it's very accessible. You probably have a craft beer place that you can walk to if you live in Western Pennsylvania. It might be a little bit of a long walk. You'll be thirsty, but you can do it. A lot of people still have anxiety about going to a beer bar or a brewery, and I don't really know what these are, and I don't know if I will like it.
Right.
I don't want to say the wrong thing. That's kind of unfortunate. That kind of stuff happens with food. It happens with a lot of stuff. But
it is funny if you think about it.
A lot of these places,
if
you go to them and you find a good server or you find the brewer who's hanging out and you ask them, there's so many nice people in this business that will tell you They'll tell you what an IPA is, and they won't laugh at you. They'll give you a little taste of one. They'll give you a taste of three, and you can find that there is one that you like, and there's one that you hate, and that'll be okay. You can learn a lot at these places if you just go in with an open mind and say, I don't know what – I'm looking at your list. I don't know what any of that is.
Right.
Let me try this, and they'll give you a little cup, and you're on your way. That's part of the fun of it, I think.
And yeah. I love what Hal B. wrote recently. Most everyone is sipping crisp pilsners or malty Schwarzbiers, lagers that are the brewery's specialty and a style of brewing that's one of the most prominent trends in beer right now. These clean, crisp brews are a break from the ultra-hopped and hazy IPAs, high-alcohol imperials, and fruit-forward tart shakes that dominated the past 5 years and remain popular among many beer lovers. That's brilliant.
Great writing. That's great writing.
And I think that it gets to Bob's point, right, which is the age of lager, which I think is kind of a reaction to a lot of the very, very hoppy beers. And
right.
So that's, you know,
the people want a cleaner beer. I would like a lighter beer. Myself.
Fruit forward.
a lot of people are making, like, you know, like our granddad's beer or our dad's beer. My dad drank Stroh's. You know, we played street hockey with the Stroh's 12-pack boxes. Yeah. A lot of the craft brewers are making that kind of beer now. My dad could drink some of this stuff and he wouldn't spit it out, but they're making it very well and it's very good. So, but you can find a Stroh's or a Rolling Rock or an Iron City, but made by these craft breweries at a very high level.
Is it clean? Is it just less hoppy? Like less bitter, or just can drink it quicker? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
less,
a little bit of that.
I should say less flavor, but in a weird way.
You know when you drink something and it's got that sort of like crisp, like flavor to it?
Yeah.
Like that. And then, you know, the difference between these craft breweries and, say, the big macro breweries is that these are just made like a little bit with a little bit more, you know, care. And so there's like just like a nicer flavor to them than you would get from...
Yeah, I'm not sure if I'm sold on the fruit beer. Sometimes I'll, you know, a little fruit. Every once in a while.
Don't be ashamed.
I know.
You're a flexitarian.
Beer, that's true. That's why I don't have IP.
But you don't have anxiety. To.
I don't think so.
But I'm not big on the fruit beer. It's kind of, I'm a traditionalist.
Like, you're going to drink two or three. I can't do.
Maybe a lime and a Corona.
Yeah, but that's like adding. What's great about the brews right now, right, is that, you know, you'll be able to go in, get a crisp lager or something like that. Someone else who likes something that is maybe a little bit more fruit forward or sour or whatever can get that, and there's all these like different choices to get. Or you can just go, and what I like about the breweries too now is you can get not just a pint of beer, but you can get, say, a 4 ounce pour. So if you want to just try something and have a little bit of it, you know, you can get that, and then maybe get something else.
Did you see that Eaton Park did a beer recently? Eaton Park doesn't even sell beer, but they, up in your neighborhood, they partnered up with Grist House this spring, just a couple of weeks ago, and at the same time that Eaton Park Strawberry Pie hit the ground, you know, like it always does, and it always has, they did a strawberry beer with Grist House called Strawberry Pie Forever. And it had a lot of strawberries. And this was Eaton Park partnering up with Grist House, a really good brewery with a really good locally owned family, another family owned a company, and that beer sold out in 2 hours.
Two hours?
The cans of that beer
sold out.
Is that
the one with a picture of the smiley cookie with the wrinkled smile? Like,
some people would think that. Other people really like that beer. I would challenge anyone to drink more than one of those at a sitting, but it's called a dessert sour. It's a very specific kind of beer.
It is made for
if you had a meal and then had a sip of this, it was like, it was really strawberry-y and not too sweet, but sweet.
But enough where you, but one would be enough.
But again, yeah, and that's a beer you might just try. You're not going to, like, you know, have a six-pack on your back porch. Right?
Six-pack of strawberry beer.
I still like a nice cold bottle of Samuel Adams Boston Lager, the original, which was originally brewed at Pittsburgh Brewing, because when Sam Cook was starting that beer, they had a facility that had the capability of doing it a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And look at everybody now. I think he did okay.
Well, and look at Iron City. Like, we talk about that like it's a brand from the past, but the brand has continued on. And as we sit here, sometime this month, they're opening this huge new brewery up in, again, another of our great place names, East Deer, PA, up by Creighton, up along Route 28.
Yeah.
That brewery is huge. They're going to be making, I don't know who's going to drink it all, but they're going to be making a lot of beer up there.
We just talked to the owner, and he's excited because they're going to have a beer museum.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that's something to look forward to.
A restaurant at some point.
No
doubt. And a distillery. They're going to be, Iron City is not right away. They're going to make, they're going to start selling beer first. They're going to have their own little distillery right there too. So it's still Iron City. It'll still, a lot of their beer at least will still be what you recognize as Iron City and Icy Mango and all those, the kinds of stuff that we're used to. But I'm sure they're going to be making an IPA at some point too. And that'll, it'll just be interesting to watch what comes out of it. What is a huge factory.
I can still hear the late great pirate broadcaster Bob Prince say, brewed and bottled by Pittsburgh Brewing Company, Pittsburgh, PA. Hal B. Klein, read all about it, Pittsburgh Magazine. Bob Batts with the Post Gazette. Guys, we should have everybody step out of their comfort zone, try some of these new beers, try a new place to have a beer, right?
Yeah, try all the beers, find a nap room.
Yes.
Everything is going
to
be great.
Try a fruit-forward butternut squash beer, whatever, whatever. And you're a flexitarian.
I'm flexitarian approved.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Guys. Thanks so much.
Good seeing you guys.
Well, we're going to have Sheila Hyland back from her trip.
She better have a tan. I'm not believing.
She better have
a
tan.
She's not in Antigua. She's got to have a tan.
And I want to thank Face for Radio Productions, Jim Patulski. Jim, let's hear it for Jim. Does a great job. Jim. Thank you, Jim. And Marcello, thank you. Our producer is Dick Roberts, who's really the this is one of the guys in life that has a right brain and a left brain that operate simultaneously. And
genius.
Jim and I treasure that.
Exactly. We write his coattails.
Check out our free app. It's Audacy, A-U-D-A-C-Y. You can download it. Access to a lot of great audio. Hopefully you'll sample more of our podcast. This is episode 33, Larry Richard Unfiltered, with Jim Krenn, Sheila Hyland. That's a wrap.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcasts.